From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. President Obama 2.0, has already faced some tough battles. Think fiscal cliff, Susan Rice. Well, the president has a new fight on his plate with the nomination of former Republican senator from Nebraska, Chuck Hagel, as his next Secretary of Defense. The complaints against Hagel, soft on Iran, soft on Iraq, hard on gays, anti-Semitism, have been flying. And so have the passionate defenses. Right man for the moment, for the president, for the country's challenges now. This hour on Point, Chuck Hagel for Secretary of Defense, the pros and the cons. Here's President Obama in the East Room of the White House yesterday with Hagel at his side, invoking bipartisanship in his choice of Hagel and in the person of Chuck Hagel.
In the Senate, I came to admire his courage and his judgment, his willingness to speak his mind, even if it wasn't popular, even if it defied the conventional wisdom. And that's exactly the spirit I want on my national security team. A recognition that when it comes to the defense of our country, we are not Democrats or Republicans, we are Americans. Each of us has a responsibility, Chuck has said, to be guided not by the interests of our party or our president even, but by the interests of our country.
The president yesterday in the East Room of the White House introducing his nominee for Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel. There has already, and even before that announcement, been an outpouring of protest from some quarters. Here's a montage of GOP critics of the former Republican U.S. Senator. These from the Senate, courtesy of MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews. The voices you'll hear are Senators John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, Ted Cruz, newly elected Republican from Texas, and Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina.
I've known Chuck Hagel. He's an honorable man. He's had a record of distinguished service, but he's profoundly wrong on a number of the most important national security issues that face our country today, like denying Iran nuclear weapons.
Hagel's record is very, very troubling on the nation of Israel. He has not been a friend to Israel, and in my view, the United States should stand unshakably with the nation of Israel. And he has consistently advocated weakness with respect to our enemies.
Chuck Hagel, if confirmed to be Secretary of Defense, would be the most antagonistic Secretary of Defense toward the state of Israel in our nation's history. He has long severed his ties with the Republican Party. This is an in-your-face nomination by the president to all of us who are supportive of Israel.
Republican Senators John Cornyn, Ted Cruz, and Lindsey Graham there in response to the president's push for Chuck Hagel. Joining me first today from Washington is David Ignatius. He's foreign affairs and national security columnist for the Washington Post. David, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here today.
Hi, Tom.
So what about it? Is this an open question whether this gets confirmed given this storm of very early, even before the formal nomination protest? Or do you see something else coming here?
Well, I think it's going to be a battle. You can already see the two sides gearing up for advertising in newspapers, maybe advertising on TV and radio, partisan committees forming much as if this was an election. The one thing that you didn't see today was criticism of Hagel from Israel itself. And I think that points up a very interesting question here. Israel already has a strained relationship with President Obama. Mm. And going into a crucial period for Israel and Israel's security in which there will be a showdown with Iran of some kind, mm-hmm. diplomatic or perhaps even military, it's in Israel's interest to the extent possible to reduce conflict. So I think one wild card here is that the Israeli government, for all its skepticism of Senator Hagel, may decide that it's better to avoid an all-out blood-on-the-floor fight, which would make relations between Jerusalem and Washington even worse than to fight it out to the end. But right now, as you look at the groups lining up and the money getting ready to be spent on ads, you'd say we have a battle ahead.
Of course, there are many willing and ready to take up that cudgel. What do you think that position means from Israel's posture then, that they don't want to be seen as opposing this Secretary of Defense, or they could work with him?
Well, I think the first point is that any Secretary of Defense works at the pleasure of the president. The U.S. Middle East policy overall, policy toward Iran, policy of working with our ally Israel will be set by President Obama. And so it's the relationship with the Obama administration as a whole that's crucial to Israel, to its current and likely future Prime Minister Netanyahu. He does not have a good personal relationship with the president. He went quite far for an Israeli prime minister in making that clear during our presidential election, pushing Obama at a period of maximum vulnerability for Obama during the campaign to make additional concessions to Israel, to Netanyahu's viewpoint. That strained some nerves in the White House. So I think this is a time when normally you'd think Netanyahu would be trying as best he can to mend fences with a president with whom he's had a strained relationship. The Hagel nomination makes that harder, as Senator Graham was quoted as saying. It is kind of in your face. But Israel's going to have to make an interesting decision. Do we want to make this even tenser, even more antagonistic? Or do we want to try to go on from here? Hagel does have a record of having supported aid for Israel, the fundamentals of the relationship, the fundamentals of the strategic alliance. He can cite a record of having been quite supportive of.
The president was certainly not surprised, as he made this announcement yesterday, by the furor that's come from some quarters. The drumbeat began long before that formal announcement yesterday. I mean, as soon as Hagel's name was floated, so he could see this coming just as clear as day, and yet he's done it. Why has President Obama, in your view, David Ignatius, chosen Chuck Hagel as his nominee?
I think President Obama has decided that in his second term, he wants, we spoke of a team of rivals as his first term cabinet, strong independent personalities, Hillary Clinton, Bob Gates, a Republican. I think in this second term, he wants what a friend of mine called a team of allies, not a team of rivals. And these will all be people with whom he has a close personal relationship and who, more to the point, owe their jobs to him, to his decision to pick them, in the case of Hagel, to pick them despite strong signals that there will be a big confirmation fight. The president feels comfortable with these people. He's traveled extensively with Hagel. This is not a president who feels chummy with a lot of people in Washington. And from my sense of the two, Senator Hagel is one of the few people he really does relax around. What he likes about Hagel is Hagel's very down to earth. Mm-hmm. You know, he talks like an enlisted man, which is what he was in the U.S. Army in Vietnam. You know. He was a sergeant. And he just says it. He's, you know, he doesn't talk fancy. I think Obama likes that directness. He thinks he'll need it in having somebody who can talk to the military for him, keep the military with him as he withdraws troops from Afghanistan. We haven't talked about that, but that's another key task for Senator Hagel as defense secretary. Well, but basically, Hagel will be Obama's guy, and that's important to the president.
So there's a good personal connection and that comfort factor. Of course, that's important, but let's go to worldview perspective. We go to policy. How do they line up there? He must be choosing him because they line up in some way. Where's that? Where are those parallels, that harmony?
I think that we're getting in Hagel, Kerry, and John Brennan at CIA a team that is likely to try to implement the foreign policy vision the president had when he first came into office, which is about trying to seek diplomatic engagement with adversaries, Iran in particular, trying again, I think, for some kind of peacemaking breakthrough on the Arab-Israeli front, trying to come up with some Syria policy. Both Hagel and Kerry, I think, are the strongest reactors, in a sense, to what happened under President Bush in Iraq and in the war on terror. They're people who saw the American position around the world deteriorating, saw the United States losing friends and allies, want to repair those alliances and relationships. Will reach out to reassure traditional partners that the United States is going to be there for them. When I think about Hagel, I think people often describe our confrontation with Iran, and Graham Allison's phrase, it's the Cuban Missile Crisis in slow motion. Mm-hmm. And one way to think about this is that President Obama has chosen his XCOM for this crisis. He's chosen his executive committee of inner advisors who will be with him as this crisis deepens, as I'm just sure it will, through 2013. And what he can be confident, unlike President Kennedy, who had advisors saying, bomb him, Mr. President, you got to go to war, you got to bomb him. He can be confident that his Secretary of Defense will, in fact, say, Mr. President, I'm worried about war. I'm worried about the drift to war. I think we should be careful and look at our options.
And in the half minute we've got before the break here, David, why the pushback so hot, so fierce on Hagel? Fundamentally, why?
Well, I think a part of it is some of these remarks he's made taken out of context. I think, to be honest, pro-Israel groups thought they could shoot the nomination down by opposing it so strongly.
Before it was ever formally made.
They didn't, and they're now kind of having to follow through it with the arguments. You know, you'd have to say, frankly, that on the spectrum of American politics among current and former U.S. senators, Senator Hagel would, you know, be on the, if you say, one-third most skeptical of some Israeli policies. I think I'd put him in that group. That doesn't mean he's anti-Israel. He has not been. But Hagel doesn't like to be told how to vote. He doesn't like signing letters that are 100-1 saying what the policy is going to be.
Let's hear just a little bit from Chuck Hagel himself. This is from a speech on the Senate floor at the height of the 2006 war in Lebanon, Israel-Hezbollah. Then Senator Chuck Hagel, Republican of Nebraska, said that the U.S. relationship with Israel should not take priority over alliances with Arab countries.
The United States will remain committed to defending Israel. Our relationship with Israel is a special and historic one, but it need not and cannot be at the expense of our Arab and Muslim relationships. That is an irresponsible and dangerous false choice. Achieving a lasting resolution to the Arab-Israeli conflict is as much in Israel's interests as in any country in the world. Unending war will continually drain Israel of its human capital, resources, and energy as it continually fights for its survival. The United States and Israel must understand that it is not in their long-term interest to allow themselves to become isolated in the Middle East and the world. Neither can allow themselves to drift into an us-against-the-world global optic or zero-sum game.
Senator Chuck Hagel in 2006 on the floor of the United States Senate. Here yesterday on NPR's All Things Considered, the show spoke to Elliot Abrams, fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, noted neocon, man remembered for his involvement in the Iran-Contra scandal and for a strong push for the Iraq War. Elliot Abrams bluntly associated Hagel with anti-Semitism.
I think he has a chance at his confirmation hearing to show that he is not what he appears to be, which is frankly an anti-Semite. It's not just being anti-Israel. He's got a problem with what he calls the Jews, the Jewish lobby. I think if he cannot satisfy people that he is not, in fact, bigoted against Jews, he certainly should not be confirmed.
Hot talk there from Elliot Abrams yesterday on NPR's All Things Considered. David Ignatius of The Washington Post is with us from Washington. With us from Washington as well, Danielle Pletka, Vice President for Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute, author of Containing and Deterring a Nuclear Iran. Danielle Pletka, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from New York, Peter Beinart, senior political writer for The Daily Beast, editor of The Daily Beast blog Open Zion, associate professor of journalism at the City University of New York, author of The Crisis of Zionism and the Icarus Syndrome. Peter Beinart, welcome back to you as well.
Nice to be here.
Danielle, first to you. There has been very fierce criticism here even before the formal nomination. What's at the heart of that in your view?
I think there's just a concern among many in Washington on both sides of the aisle that not only is Chuck Hagel wrong for the job by temperament, by his political views, not just on foreign policy, but on a whole variety of social issues, but that there are so many other potential candidates that the president might have picked, names that have been out there that are really from well-qualified individuals, Democrats, Republicans, if that's what the president really wants, others who wouldn't have brought this kind of firestorm of controversy to the process and wouldn't, oddly, I think, have used up the president's political capital at a time when he is in for some very, very serious fights about the budget, about the fiscal cliff, about the defense budget in particular.
And what do you say to Elliot Abrams' charge there that Chuck Hagel appears to be an anti-Semite?
I don't want to characterize Elliot's views. I think it's important that people look at what Senator Hagel has said. The problem is not that Senator Hagel has an issue with the state of Israel, which I think is manifest from his many statements and viewpoints, but that there's a pattern of other decisions on his part, whether it was this casual reference to the Jewish lobby, it was his failure to sign on to a letter that 99 other members signed on to, asking Boris Yeltsin at the time to do more and act more strongly against growing anti-Semitism in Russia. You know, those aren't the actions of a maverick. And I think that it's important to push on back on that notion. There are plenty of mavericks in the United States Senate. I spent 10 years, and I know a lot of them. When someone decides not to sign a letter like that, it's not because they're a maverick. It's because they don't want to. I think Chuck Hagel didn't want to.
Peter Beiner, what do you make of the nomination, and what do you make of the pushback?
You know, this is so typical of the campaign that's being launched against Chuck Hagel. What Daniel didn't tell you is that Chuck Hagel had a reason for not signing that letter. He had a policy of not signing letters to leaders of foreign governments about domestic issues, and so he sent a letter to Bill Clinton urging Bill Clinton to work against anti-Semitism, to use the administration of Bill Clinton to push against anti-Semitism in Russia. So that's the kind of thing. This is so typical of the kind of claims that are being waged against this guy. David Ignatius says we don't know how Israeli officials are going to come out against Chuck Hagel. In fact, today, Ehud Barak, the defense minister, praised Chuck Hagel, as did Israel's deputy foreign minister, Danny Ayalon, who called him a friend. And so
I don't care what the Israelis think about our defense secretary nominee.
All right, but if one is going to call – but you called it – you said if people are going to call him anti-Israel, then I think the positions of the Israeli deputy foreign minister and defense minister are relevant, aren't they?
Danny Ayalon saying, I've met with him many times, and he certainly regards Israel as a true and natural U.S. ally. Surely that's relevant here, Daniel.
No, I don't think it is. And I, you know, believe me, again, I spent 10 years working on confirmations for people. Never once was I interested, nor were the members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, in what a foreign government had to say about our nominees. This is a decision for the American people and their representatives. Of course, the Israelis are going to take an appropriate position. What if Chuck Hagel is confirmed? They will be forced to work with him. It is appropriate that they try and calm it for political reasons. But again, it's not relevant to our process. This is about his fitness for the job, not about what foreigners think.
If he's accused of being anti-Israel, it would seem relevant to me, but I take your point. Peter Beiner, give us your bigger position on, you know, what's going on with this nomination, and again, your broader perspective on this strong vein of pushback.
What's going on, I think, is that Chuck Hagel is one of the very few people who was a prominent Republican in foreign policy whose views actually changed as a result of the disaster in Iraq. By and large, the Republican foreign policy class acts as if nothing has happened over the past 10 years. Its view of the world has been unchanged. I think Chuck Hagel has the virtue of actually having seen what's happened and having come to what I would call a much more Dwight Eisenhower-esque view about the uncontrollability of war. And in a context in which the conversation about military action against Iran is often conducted as if we've learned as if Iraq and Afghanistan did not take place, and as if we could have a few days of airstrikes and then it would be over. I think that Chuck Hagel's perspective, again, very similar to Eisenhower, who was also a military man, that war once unleashed is not easily controlled, is very important at this moment.
Let's hear from our listeners. Shalom in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Shalom, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My point is that this appointment is a powerful message which may lead to World War III. Let me explain. The message is that the option which in both elections our president strongly emphasized, that namely the option that in worst case scenario, if nuclear armament will take place in Iran, it will be stricken, has been taken off the table by the appointment, not just by the personality of Mr. Hegel, who is, I'm sure, strongly patriotic and wants peace. And that same thing happened, of course, during Munich Agreement.
But you think Hegel means no military option with Iran, means Iran nukes, means World War III? Let me take that to you, David Ignatius. What about that logic?
Well, I don't think you can say that Hegel's appointment changes President Obama's stated position. President Obama said last year that his policy is not one of containment of a nuclear Iran, but one of preventing Iran from getting nuclear weapons. I don't think presidents can make statements like that lightly. Mm. And so I think we should assume that that still stands. I do think it's right to say that in choosing Senator Hegel as his Secretary of Defense, the president has chosen somebody who will not urge him towards the use of military force, but will urge him to seek alternatives. But if there is no other way to prevent Iran from having a nuclear weapon, I would assume that Senator Hegel would be on board with the president's stated, clearly enunciated policy. I'm certain they had discussions of that in the White House before the nomination went forward.
Daniel Pletka?
I have no idea what Chuck Hegel would do in that instance. I can only go by what he said in the past and his obvious leeriness of any sort of military action. Now, that's the right approach for anybody from the get-go. But I think it's important to remember that President Obama was elected on a platform of sitting down and talking to the Iranians. He, more than any of his predecessors, has made efforts. I would say he's been more forward-leaning, aggressively forward-leaning, to coin a phrase. And yet he's been rebuffed by the Iranians, who've made more progress in the last 4 years on their nuclear weapons program than they have in the previous 20. So I think it does send a message, for sure, that that President Obama is not going to have somebody who encourages him, but not only that, is not going to have somebody who's interested in following the signals from Iran that they are continuing with their program willy-nilly and that the potential threat of military action may actually bring them to the table.
Peter Beinart,
I think it's an unfortunate choice.
How do you see Chuck Hegel in the Iran nuclear equation, Peter?
I think that, as David Ignatius said, Chuck Hegel is someone who wants to give diplomacy a try. Yes, there have been some efforts, but I think actually given the consequences of military action. The consequences of military action as laid out by national security chiefs both in Israel and the United States who have warned about devastating regional consequences and about the possibility that, in fact, the impact of military action would be quite limited and would lead Iran to redouble their efforts and probably rally people around the regime. There is much more effort to be made in terms of seeing where there could be a diplomatic deal. And I think where Hegel differs from the Republican critics of his in the Senate is that he wants to go down that road and that he's open to a deal that would involve U.S. compromise, as almost every diplomatic deal has to. And I think that is an important cleavage here.
Let's go to Albert in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Albert, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
I'm really impressed with President Obama's nomination. I happened to listen to it yesterday on C-SPAN, as well as a book Hegel was on. It was an interview he did or a book review somewhat back in 2008.
Okay.
And I found it very interesting that many of the points that he promoted in his book were some of the same perspectives or a worldview that President Obama has embraced actually coming into his first presidency, which was first realigning America's role in the world, becoming a much more of a non-paternalistic entity and presence in around the world.
What about the critique? What about the critique, Albert? That he's soft on Iran? That he's not a true friend of Israel?
I believe that I don't believe so much that that's true. I think that our preceding attitudes towards Iran and Israel have been colored with a worldview, a perspective that really is in many ways, I think, obsolete today. When you look at their cultures, when you look at how, yes, they have some political regimes and political components that are adversarial and difficult to deal with and negotiate, but again, the paternalistic attitude that many of the people who are condemning it, that perspective is not the way to go in the future. America has to really reevaluate how we engage other cultures.
Albert, I appreciate your call. David Ignatius, David Brooks looks at this nomination this morning and says, this is the guy who's been brought in to wind down American military power, America's global national security profile, because we're not willing to make other sacrifices, and so we can't afford it. And Chuck Hagel's the guy being brought in to midwife that.
Well, I think there's some truth to David Brooks's observation. Senator Hagel, having decided that he made a mistake about Iraq, has viewed
which he first supported and then fiercely criticized,
which he supported mm-hmm. and then pulled back from very ruefully,
mm-hmm.
has been very skeptical about our involvement in Afghanistan. I think his view has been closer to that of Vice President Biden's, that we should keep the U.S. military presence in Afghanistan very limited. And I think you can expect that Hagel will be an advocate of a rapid drawdown of the remaining U.S. forces in Afghanistan, and will support a relatively small number of U.S. troops staying on after 2015. There are recommendations from General Alm, a commander in Kabul, ranged from 6,000 to 20,000. And I'm told that the Hagel would be likely to support 6,000 at most, and that's likely to be the White House position. Hagel, in a sense, as only a combat veteran can, hates to see the loss of young soldiers' lives in wars that he has concluded just don't make sense in policy terms. That's where he is on Afghanistan. And for that reason, I just think he will want the troops out of there so they're not risking their lives as quickly as he thinks is realistically possible.
Peter Beinart, a caretaker for American withdrawal, decline, or a good reorientation in this man?
This is a really important question, and this is, again, why I go back to Eisenhower, who, above all, as a military man who also hated combat, knew fundamentally that American military power, which was not paid for by American financial strength, that we could not afford, that drew us down into debt, did not make us stronger but made us weaker. That's why Eisenhower drove down the defense budget. We are paying for this huge Bush-era defense increase that the Republican Party wants no retreat from on a credit card. And it has not made us stronger. It's made us weaker because we won the Cold War and World War II fundamentally because our military strength was anchored in our economic strength. I think that's what Hagel understands. There was a massive increase in America's global military footprint in the 1990s and then after 9/11. We were not isolationist during Ronald Reagan's period, and yet we had no ground troops in Central Asia or virtually in the Middle East during that period. A reorientation is not isolationism. It doesn't make America weaker. It could make us stronger.
Lots of people joining us online. Phyllis says, the man is an anti-Semite. He and his supporters may try and blow a fog over the facts, but an anti-Semite is an anti-Semite. That's a very potent word. On the other hand, Neil writes, the shrill objections have come from a few Republicans. Most of these, he writes, are so-called neocons, and I don't trust them as far as I could throw them. Talene writes, do we ask, is so-and-so, such-and-such a nominee pro-Canada or pro-France enough? Sam, in Everett, Massachusetts, you're on the air, Sam.
Hey, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call, mm-hmm. and hello to your guests. Mm-hmm. The question that I would have for your guests is, when I look back on the past 50 years of U.S. War efforts, they all seem like a total waste, a total blunder, a total series of avoidable mistakes. I remember well the friends that came back in boxes from Vietnam. I'm glad for the fact that Hagel is a veteran of that terrible fiasco. And I'm glad that he had the honesty and the courage to stand up and say, Iraq was a terrible mistake. We were bamboozled. And it seems to me this is just I'm guessing, payback time for not towing the party line and saying something about the emperor's clothes. And my question would be, what's wrong with saying, of having a reluctance to go to war, and having the courage to say that going to war to dominate markets is not a good idea?
I'll put that question right to Danielle Pletka. Danielle, what do you say?
Well, I agree with the caller. There's nothing wrong with being against going to war. To the contrary, there's everything right about it. On the other hand, we need to understand that one of the reasons why we have a strong military, one of the reasons why we have a military at all, is to keep us from having to go to war, is giving other countries, would-be adversaries, a reason to think twice about taking on a power such as the United States. It's one of the reasons that we have a navy throughout the world. It's very important in the Mediterranean and the Pacific. It's one of the reasons why we have had a dominant air force, and it is one of the reasons why we have one of the best armies in the world.
It hasn't kept
it's
us
not
out
so
of war.
We can.
As Madeleine Albright said, you know, what's the point if you don't use it? And as our caller points out, we have used it often.
We use our military often. On the other hand, if I think back to not the first half of the American century when we lost hundreds of thousands in war, even to the second half of the American century when in the Eisenhower administration that seems to be getting a lot of attention right now, we lost tens of thousands in Korea. Yes, we lost tens of thousands in Vietnam and had a feckless administration that was unwilling to pursue that war correctly. So I can't disagree about that. In this century, think of what the price has been. Yes, it has been high because every soldier is somebody's mother, father, sister, brother, son or daughter. This is a very high price, but that is also why these courageous men and women join the military. It is to fight for the things that they believe are right. We've lost less than 10,000 troops in the wars that have been fought since 9/11, and while that is a very high cost, I think that actually what we've achieved is substantial, and I challenge people who say that we've achieved nothing in Iraq or Afghanistan.
We'll take that to Peter Beiner, but let me go first to Senator Hagel's home state, Nebraska, Omaha, Nebraska. Eva's calling. Eva, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to say I'm a strong Chuck Hagel supporter. He was a really good senator for Nebraska, and he was really crucified by the Republicans here in the state when he stood against Bush in the Iraq War, and I think he would make an excellent Secretary of Defense.
Eva, we heard Elliot Abrams saying on NPR last night that the Nebraska Jewish community was not happy with Chuck Hagel.
Well, I have to say, I have family in Israel, and I am not an anti-Semite, and I strongly agree with the stand that he's taken.
On Iraq, on Iran, Israel.
Israel, yes, yes. And my family in Israel feels that way.
Eva, I appreciate your call. Peter Beinert, you've written that Hagel's Jewish lobby remarks are a sideshow. Why do you say that?
Well, first of all, one of the most powerful American Jewish leaders, Malcolm Hohenlein, executive vice chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, used that same phrase, Jewish lobby, in an interview very casually in December. It is inaccurate in the sense that there are many Christians who are also involved in what I would call the kind of hawkish pro-Israel lobby. But there are also groups like the American Jewish Committee that have Jewish in the name that lobby for particular views on Israel. And if Chuck Hagel had the same views on military spending and on Iran that John McCain had, I think it's overwhelmingly likely that we would not even be talking about these issues. The real issue is people who disagree with his policy views. They have every right. But for the promiscuity with which some on the Jewish right throw around terms like anti-Semitism with in a way that would have made Al Sharpton blush at his worst when he called people racist just because they disagreed with him. To me, I have to say, as an American Jew, it makes me ashamed. We should have a much higher standard for genuine anti-Semitism than I think is being laid out by some of Hagel's critics right now.
Danielle, is the phrase, the word being thrown around too lightly here?
I think that it's a very high bar that has to be reached. It's important that people not conflate the notion of being hostile to the state of Israel or questioning the state of Israel and anti-Semitism. That being said, I think that somebody with nothing to hide should be able to answer legitimate questions about this. And I think that Chuck Hagel has said enough things and been reported to have said enough things that it is a question that is worthy of being asked, and he can take it on if he gets to the confirmation process. If, in fact, he wishes to be confirmed, then I'm sure he'll be eager to answer all of these charges and explain why it is that he made the choices and said the things that he said.
David Ignatius, I can't remember personally a nomination process in which, even before it began, it was so big and in which it promised this anti-Semitism charge promised to be so high profile. Can you? And is it a fair question?
Well, judicial nominations are pretty high voltage, and this approaches that level.
But with the charge of anti-Semitism just right out front, yeah. Right on the evening news.
I think that charge is likely to recede because I just don't think there's evidence to support it. And I think many responsible critics of Hegel who don't want to see him nominated have pulled back from that. Let me just mention several things because we do need to examine the case that Hegel might not be the best Secretary of Defense. Mm-hmm. Some items that we haven't talked about that are on my mind, and I hope these questions will be asked in addition to the more inflammatory ones. First, on Afghanistan, while understanding Senator Hegel's deep frustration with this war, which is shared by all of the American public. That was just obvious during this election campaign. There is a question about how we get out of it. And what we found from our last exit from Afghanistan in the 1980s and 90s is that if you leave too quickly and create a vacuum, the result is a civil war that leads to chaos, leads to safe haven for terrorists, leads to new problems. So it's important that the U.S., having gotten in with a big footprint, get out carefully so as not to create worse problems. Second, the biggest problem the next Secretary of Defense is going to face, arguably, isn't any of the things that we've talked about, but the budget choices he's going to have to make. Yeah. The chiefs of the different services now are really sharpening their knives. I'll tell you, as somebody who covers that building, the Navy, the Army, the Marines, the Air Force are getting ready to do battle over what they know is a shrinking budget. It's going to take a very strong Secretary of Defense to make good choices and make them stick. Bob Gates, the best secretary I've watched, succeeded there because he scared people. People were frightened of disagreeing with Bob Gates.
Hegel can look scary to my eye anyway.
Hegel has a temper, Tom. This is one of his advantages. And a final point on this question of Iran. And the one thing I would say is that if you think Iran will only come to a negotiated settlement if it believes the United States really is prepared to go to war, having Chuck Hagel in as Secretary of Defense probably makes the Iranians a little bit less nervous about that. So if you believe you've got to have pedal to the metal all the way or you won't get a deal, then you'd say maybe a deal's less likely, and that would be a negative.
Peter Beinart, policy vulnerabilities there?
I think look, the Pentagon is a massive management challenge, and I think that we don't know how great a manager of the Pentagon Chuck Hagel could be. And if it turns out to be he's a terrible manager of the Pentagon, then that may matter more than all of these issues. I think in a strange way also the Republicans, through their very strong opposition to Hagel, have undermined the case of Hagel a little bit in a self-fulfilling way, because part of what you want is a Pentagon head who can go to the Senate and basically get people to give up on defense systems that we can't afford. So I think all those things are true. But I think they are less important than the fundamental reality that Hagel is actually willing to look with fresh eyes at the defense budget and at America's strategic posture, rather than simply assuming in the way that you hear from so many Republican senators that if you cut the defense budget from where George Bush brought it, that basically it makes you into a kind of 1930s-style isolationist, but to have a really open debate of the kind we don't really have about where America's core interests are and where we actually need, what military systems we actually need, and where we actually need troops on the ground and where we don't.
Daniel Pletka, Peter Beinart looks at Chuck Hagel and sees a man who, he says, as you heard, recognizes, like Dwight Eisenhower, that the country's fundamental strength grows from economic strength. It's not just about the Pentagon budget number. It's a bigger issue than that overextension may hurt our fundamental economic strength. What about that argument?
Well, I think it's important for everybody to understand that when Dwight Eisenhower was president of the United States, our defense budget was 14% of GDP. when he left office, our defense budget was about 8% of GDP because we were no longer fighting the Korean War, so those numbers went down. Our defense budget is now just under 4% of GDP and is going to go down much more.
But, I mean, we were in the Korean War. We were in the heart of the Cold War. Different times, are they not? Or
yes, I believe that we are, in fact, in different times. We're fighting a war in Afghanistan. We're facing a substantial threat in the Horn of Africa, in the Middle East, from Iran. We are very concerned about the enormous military buildup in China. Again, the military isn't about fighting. The military is about not fighting. And it's important to underscore that. Now, in terms of the budget and the implications of the Hagel choice, you know, there was a big discussion during the election about what the president's priorities were in terms of spending. And the president insisted that he was as committed to defense as the next man. What I think the Hagel nomination makes clear is that in addition to the almost half trillion, 500 billion in cuts that the Defense Department has already sustained in the last 2 years, he's going to be very comfortable with the additional 500 billion cut that the sequestration will bring, and that he will in fact manage that decline. It's not about spending and spending and spending and announcing that the only sacrosanct, the only sacred cow in the government is the Defense Department. On the other hand, we need to understand that at 18% and growing of our GDP, it is entitlements that are sucking up all of the oxygen in our economy, not the 4% and shrinking that is our defense budget.
David, do you think that Chuck Hagel will be very comfortable, as Danielle says, with an additional, you know, $500 billion sequester from the defense spending?
No. I don't see the evidence to support what Danielle said. Chuck Hagel is a military man. He doesn't like the wars that we've been in. He thinks these expeditionary wars have not brought us benefits. But I see no evidence in terms of ability to project power in Asia, in terms of the traditional high-cost procurement items for the Air Force and the Navy. I see no evidence that Chuck Hagel would be a radical person on cuts, quite the opposite. Also, I think in terms of the usual way that people try to whittle down the defense budget, which is to skimp on operations and maintenance. Hagel, as a former sergeant, two-time Purple Heart winner, he knows that kind of baloney, and I think he'll resist those cuts. So, no, I think Hagel will be like Panetta. I think he will try to keep as much military muscle as he can. His problem is he's going to have the services fighting over how that pie is cut, and that's where we're really going to see, in terms of the traditional metrics of how a SecDef performs, how he does.
Peter Beinart, what's your sense of how in the consensus or out of it, Chuck Hagel really is? I mean, Tom Friedman writes in the New York Times, he says, the only thing standing between Israel and national suicide by Israel, he says, anymore, is America and its willingness to tell Israel the truth. Friedman writes, but most U.S. senators, policymakers, and Jews prefer to stick their heads in the sand because confronting Israel is so unpleasant and politically dangerous. Is Chuck Hagel really isolated here, or does he have a view on the Middle East that many share but don't articulate? What, Peter?
It depends where you look. If you look at the foreign policy establishment, our former defense secretaries and ambassadors and state people, State Department, who have come out for Chuck Hagel in droves, Democrats and Republicans, he's very much in the mainstream. If you look at polls of American Jews who support active American involvement, even if it means some pressure on both sides to get to a two-state solution, he's also well within the mainstream. Where he's not within the mainstream is in Congress, because there is very, very little open, serious debate about the wisdom of Israeli policy and American support of Israeli policy in Congress today, which does not serve the U.S. national interest and does not serve Israel, as Israel moves closer to making the two-state solution impossible through its massive subsidies of settlement growth. And I think it's important that Hagel is willing to open up that as a topic of conversation, because I think others hopefully will follow.
Daniel Plitka, you've watched for a long time. What's your guess? Does this nomination go through? Is this our next Secretary of Defense?
Well, you know, one thing that Peter said makes me laugh. You know, suggesting that somehow all of these unelected former Secretaries of State and Secretaries of Defense are somehow the great litmus test, but that the representatives of our people in the Congress of the United States are somehow lesser judges seems to me to be a little bit odd. What do I think is going to happen? I think it's going to be an unpleasant process. I think it's a controversial nomination at a time when we didn't need one. I suspect, because there is an enormous amount of deference in the Senate to any president to allow him to choose his cabinet, that Senator Hagel could be confirmed. But it'll be a hard fight.
Peter Beinart, what's your guess?
Yes, I think you already see that the major American Jewish organizations, pro-Israel organizations like AIPAC, are basically saying they're not going to make this a public fight because they can't win and they need to maintain relationships with Hagel and Obama in a second term.
Gratitude to all three of you for being with us today, for your insights. Peter Beinart at the Daily Beast, author of The Crisis of Zionism in New York. Peter, thank you. Daniel Pletka, David Ignatius, thanks to all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.